This is Sarah Stewart Holland.
And this is Beth Silvers.
Thank you for joining us for Pantsuit Politics. Hello, and welcome to a special episode of Pantsuit Politics. We wanted an episode that meets us where we are all at as we enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday. We had Dan Harris on the podcast in November of 2020 to talk about his career as a journalist and how that led him to become the co-founder of 10% Happier, which started as a book and became an app and a podcast all about mindfulness and how it can improve our lives. It's one of our favorite conversations, and we wanted to share it again with all of you.
And we want to remind you that if you are starting to scramble to get through the month of December, we have a gift guide available for you. Maggie put together all of our favorite things that we've mentioned on the podcast, all of those things that we talk about, and then someone reaches out and says, didn't Sarah mention this skincare product, or didn't Beth mention those pants? It's all here in one place for you, so you can go to the show notes, get that gift guide of our favorite things, and we hope you really enjoy today's episode.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze. We put it in, it took like 30 seconds, guys. And its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine is at about 50%, and I'll tell you why. I have a tendency to overcommit. I want to help with everything I can possibly help with. I want to do everything I can possibly do. I want to be with people, and I forget that at the end of the day, I am an introvert, and I really need time to recharge and take care of myself. Therapy gives me important tools to do that, to recognize what's going on, to understand my battery and where it is and why it's there and what I can do to recharge. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/pantsuit. So that I do not like to spend my time or money in salons when I can help it, but I do enjoy a good manicure, and I especially enjoy spending time with my daughters doing the Olive and June mani system at home, because we can all get a good looking manicure for around $2. We know that the polish won't chip and will last at least a full week. We get to await with anticipation the new colors that come out each season. The girls love being able to add some sparkles or choose whether they want their top coat to be matte or shiny. We just have a really good time together with salon grade tools that are so easily explained so that we can do a really good job taking care of our nails, but do it all from the comfort at home. All the choices of a big salon stored in a basket in my closet for when we're ready to hang out together. The Olive and June mani system is a real game changer. So visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first mani system.
We are both huge fans of your work. I read your book, 10% Happier, back in 2014. We both use your meditation app. And You also work in the news business. So you're really, I feel like, straddling the worlds that we straddle often, which is news, consciousness, grace, in a world where there is not a lot to go around. We're so thrilled to have you, though. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me. I will warn you that I straddle those worlds imperfectly.
As we do we all. Now, first and most important question, is Joseph Goldstein in some sort of hermetically sealed situation so that he is protected at all costs?
Just for the uninitiated, Joseph Goldstein is my meditation teacher and really great friend and the founding teacher on the 10% Happier app, 76 years old and a living treasure. He doesn't like when I praise him too much. He doesn't like that at all. But so I'm hoping he doesn't listen to this. Yes. So I completely understand the spirit in which you've asked that question. And yes, he's taking very good care of himself. Okay. I actually saw him recently. He's in his home in central Massachusetts, not venturing out too often. So all is well with Joseph.
Good, good. I was listening to the meditation app this morning, a Joseph Goldstein. I was like, well, this is what I'm going to ask first, because we need to make sure that he's very, very safe. Now, for the uninitiated, will you tell people how you came into this space as a reporter, into the meditation space as a reporter?
Yeah, super skeptically. I was not interested in meditation at all. I was pretty hostile to it. But the short version is that I had a panic attack on the air in 2004 on Good Morning America. I've worked at ABC News now for about 20 years, but I was relatively new back then. And it kind of set me off on this weird and winding journey, which I wrote about in a book called 10% Happier. And that journey kind of ultimately landed me on meditation. And I was really skeptical about it, but ended up noticing that there was a lot of science that really strongly suggests that meditation is very good for you and that it can lower your blood pressure and boost your immune system and rewire key parts of your brain, you know, literally change your brain. It's almost as if you're performing neurosurgery on yourself. And that was compelling to me. My parents are both scientists. My wife is a scientist. I'm not good at math, so I'm not a scientist. I wear makeup and talk to television cameras for a living. But I was really compelled. And I also, you know, had plenty of struggles in my own life with depression, anxiety, substance abuse, found it to be really helpful. It's not a panacea. That's why I kind of semi-facetiously called my book 10% Happier. And that's the name I've slapped on everything I've done subsequently, from the meditation app to the podcast. Brand continuity. It's very important. So I became a convert and really have kind of dedicated most of my life subsequently to, you know, trying to spread the good news.
How does this greater level of consciousness and the intentional focus that you've put on meditation change the way that you take in information in the news space?
One of the things that allowed me to do meditation, even though I was, as I said before, hostile, meditation, that word is a little bit like sports, but when you say the word sports, you know, there's a big difference between hockey and field hockey, a big difference between water polo and badminton. And so when I'm talking about meditation, I'm talking about mindfulness meditation, which is derived from Buddhism, but thoroughly stripped of any religious lingo or metaphysical claims. It's a kind of secular exercise for your brain. And it's very simple. The first step is to kind of sit in a comfortable position, close your eyes. The second step is to bring your full attention to the feeling of your breath coming in and going out. Like, pick one spot where you feel your breath most prominently. And the third step is the most important, which is, as soon as you try to do this seemingly simple thing of just feeling your breath, your mind's going to go nuts. You're going to start having all these random thoughts and urges and emotions, and you may be planning a homicide or some sort of,
political coup.
Yeah, political coup or some sort of, expletive laden speech you're going to deliver to your boss or whatever. And the whole goal is just to notice whenever you've gotten carried away and to start again and again and again. And that noticing the distraction and starting again is meditation. You are not supposed to clear your mind. That's impossible unless you're enlightened or dead. The whole goal, again, is just to notice how wild the mind is and start again and again and again. And that act is like a bicep curl for your brain. And that's what changes the brain. And we see it in the brain scans of meditators. So how does this help in when you're, you know, consuming the chaos that we're all viewing on the political scene? In a number of ways. I think most prominently, what it does is it gives you a kind of self-awareness, this deliberate collision with the voice in your head, the noise in your head, allows you to not be so owned by it. So, for example, if you're checking Twitter and then 7 hours later, you have not lifted your head, your nose out of your phone, and you're, you know, typing in all caps at your voluble uncle, maybe 6 hours and 45 minutes earlier, you would have noticed, oh yeah, I'm getting overtaken by my anger. I'm going to make a decision to put the phone down. And that can work in, you know, you can scale this into almost every aspect of your life. You might decide that you're not going to say something that's going to ruin the next 48 hours of your marriage. You might decide I'm not going to eat the 78th Oreo. It's all about this self-awareness that allows you to reduce your emotional reactivity, to reduce your urge, you know, you're acting uncontrollably on your urges. And that's incredibly useful in, you know, in a tumultuous time.
I think that self-awareness is what I've definitely noticed in my own life, particularly with the doom scrolling, but not just the actions I'm taking with news and politics, but the thought processes that I can see myself sort of cycling through. We were talking about it on an episode recently, and I said, I do struggle sometimes because it's the bicep curl gets you to a point where, like, you can notice you're doing the doom scrolling and still feel powerless to turn off Twitter. I've been in so many spots where I'm like laying in my bed and I can feel myself going back to the same places over and over and over again, even though I just checked them, and still like noticing it and being like, oh God, just put it down. It's still really difficult.
Well, I think you got to give yourself a break, because I'll go back to my whole 10% shtick. Perfection is not on offer here. Mm-hmm. You're not going to, I have a strong suspicion, and I can't prove this because we can't, you know, we're not in that Gwyneth Paltrow movie Sliding Doors. We can't, I can't run your life in two parallel tracks and show you the difference. But I have a strong suspicion that if you've been meditating for any significant period of time, you're doing less of the behavior you just described than mm-hmm. you would have otherwise done. And that is the proposition here, not perfection, but slow, steady improvement. And really, just to say that another way, the mental skills we want, you know, like patience, lowered emotional reactivity, calm, a greater ability not to be yanked around by urges to check Twitter or to read or whatever. All of those things are skills. They're not factory settings.
Mm.
And you can work on them. And so you are working on them. And yes, of course, you're not going to be perfect, but you can also get better at lowering the volume on the self-laceration around your mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this, you might wake up an hour into a doom scrolling and notice, oh yeah, I'm unhappy. Maybe there are better uses of my time. And then you might notice buckets and buckets of self criticism as a consequence of having wasted an hour. You can notice that too, and just drop and let that go. And so that the skill of mindfulness or self-awareness just gets deeper and deeper.
Dan, how do you respond to criticisms around this conversation that it is centered in privilege, or that it creates a level of denial or space from crises that prevent us from action? I mean, my own experience is that maybe sometimes if you dip your toe into a meditation practice, you can say things like, well, I just have to turn off the news because it's not good for me. But then when you get deeper into it, it actually brings you in closer connection to the world's problems and your place in constructively contributing to solutions. But I wonder if that's been your experience or how you talk about those types of critiques.
Well, This is a great question, and I'm glad you asked it. First of all, I mean, just to note, there is a lot of privilege, in part because the aforementioned good news around meditation seems to, and not for lack of trying on my end, and although I'm an imperfect messenger, it seems to be sort of largely circulated in upper middle class white communities, you know, so there's a pretty big overlap between people who are interested in meditation and, you know, people who go to SoulCycle and shop at Whole Foods. and I don't say that with any hate in my heart. I mean, I am that person, back before the pandemic, at least. But these skills that I'm describing, first of all, were not invented by white people. Right. They were invented 2,600 years ago in the Indian subcontinent. And they are human capacities that are your birthright, no matter your pigmentation or socioeconomic status. And so what we need is to get the word out in a more broad fashion. And that means we need, you know, and I've been really focused on this, finding people who can speak to different communities, because based on the womb I came out of, my appeal is going to be limited. And so I try on my podcast to give the mic to people of all different backgrounds and socioeconomic status and race and gender and sexual orientation. And so that's really, really important. The second thing to say, though, is for sure, I think a misunderstanding or even a misapplication of mindfulness and meditation might lead to a numbing out. But that is not the proposition here. When I say don't get, I'm not saying never check Twitter. I'm definitely not saying never check the news. I'm a newsman. I think the key is the type of engagement that will allow you to stay engaged and do meaningful work without losing your mind. Mm-hmm. And that's where meditation comes in. So it's really not about disengagement or detachment. It's about sort of leaning in a way that allows you to stay leaned in and focused on the things that matter rather than wasting your time and energy in ways that reduce your resilience.
I'm fascinated when I think back when you were saying, well, I've been with ABC News since 2004. You wrote this book in 2014. And since then, you've grown in the podcast and the app. You know, I'm just fascinated by the prospect of you in one area of your life, in the news space, in the political space, watching this emotional reactivity just grow and grow and grow culturally, societally, while simultaneously being in this consciousness space and when you're really advocating for a different type of approach and experiencing the results of that in your personal life. Like, how have you navigated that without, you know, feeling ripped in two by these two spaces that seemingly have nothing in common and have been going in different directions? Because I do feel like there's a growing consciousness in this one subset, but it does seem difficult to build the bridge in this other societal space of news and politics, which seem to be, the consciousness seems to be decreasing.
I guess I would say three things that come to mind based on that question. One is, it's definitely frustrating and sad to watch the ripping apart of our social fabric. And I noticed that I have anger, frustration, despair when I check the news sometimes or when I give the news sometimes. But I go back to what I was just saying, which is the second point I was going to make is I actually really feel more fortified and resourced to engage calmly and more effectively now that I have this mental exercise in my life that I know is changing my brain and by extension my mind, allowing me to not be so owned by my emotions, even as it seems pretty clear that many, many other people are owned by their emotions and in ways that I think are pretty unhealthy. So I'm really grateful that I have this in my life. Otherwise, I worry that I might be part of the problem. And then I guess the final thing I'd say is that I've been running a little bit of an experiment that I'll just mention. I don't know if you guys haven't really talked about it that much publicly, but you see what you guys think. Is just for myself, for the last 4 years, really trying to truly vary my media diet. So I'm in the news and, you know, I get a ton of my news just by, you know, reading the internal ABC News emails, because we get the news first and then we're talking about it internally. And so traditionally that's been basically been where I got most of my news, just being in the job and also, you know, reading, let's just say, the Times, a few other news outlets. But I've really, over the last 4 years, tried to do a much better job at consuming left, right, center. So just by example, for example, I'll listen to Pod Save America, but I'll also listen to Ben Shapiro or the commentary podcast on the right. I'll listen to the so-called intellectual dark web figures like Sam Harris, who happens to be a friend, or Glenn Lowry, who's sort of not that well known, but should be, who's an African-American economics professor at Brown, who has he's a sort of center right and has a podcast that he does called The Glenn Show. And so I'll read newsletters and read and follow a whole variety of people across the spectrum on Twitter. And I found initially when I was doing that it would be head spinning, because some a big event would happen in the news and I would process it by listening to Morning Joe or reading the Times or whatever. And then I'd listen to a completely different point of view from Ben Shapiro or the commentary guys. And I'd be so confused. But what I found is that confusion is, I feel healthy. It's like I'm gaslighting myself, but in a good way. because it's knocking me off my, it's so easy to fall into a kind of an information bubble and a sort of blind dogmatism. Whereas if I'm having my own viewpoints challenged regularly, it puts me into what the Buddhists call beginner's mind. And it doesn't knock me off of my core values, but it does mean that I'm really opening up to many different points of view. And I feel like that strikes at the heart of the problem that we're facing in this country, which is that most of us are tailoring our own information bubbles on Facebook or Twitter or wherever, or just reading the Times or just watching Fox News, or we don't understand how other people think. And then the temptation to vilify is really powerful and maybe even irresistible. And I wish more of us were doing that. It reminds me of a tweet I saw that said, if you're only following people you agree with, you're doing it wrong.
Something I think about a lot is that sense of equanimity does not mean that you believe all things are equal or that you lack passion or emotion about anything, right? It's just more about decision making and the process. And so when I look at that disparate treatment of an issue across media, I feel the same way. I like to take in a lot of different voices on a specific subject. I find that less head spinning at this point than just the pace of new information developing. And I'm really working on myself at saying, I'm not ready to talk about this yet. I'm not ready to make a podcast about this yet. I'm not ready to have an opinion about it. I need more information and I need some time for that information to sink in. Now, I have that luxury because we make an independent podcast. I'm interested in whether that comes up for you and how you deal with that in an environment like ABC, where the speed really does matter in terms of how you communicate with viewers, listeners, et cetera.
Well, the beauty and freedom of working at a place like ABC News is we are not taking sides. Now, we certainly get criticized from both left and right, but generally speaking, you know, our motto is straightforward. Generally speaking, we are really, in my opinion, and obviously I am super biased here, so you should take what I say with a grain of salt, but I think, having worked at ABC News for 20 years, that we do a really good job of just kind of delivering the facts. And so I don't really feel like I need to come in with a point of view. I do come in with questions, and I do try to always take my time to understand what the raw data is. But generally, we're in the business of giving you the information. rather than having a hot take on the information. So it's, I think that's an easier job than, say, working at Vox or having a Twitter feed where I'm commenting on every jot and tittle of the news cycle. But just to go back to what you said about equanimity, I think that's exactly right. There's a difference between equanimity and a complete numbing out. And that the proposition of mindfulness is not that you should be sort of blissed out and neutral and bovine, but instead that you should be able to respond wisely to all of the stimuli in your life rather than reacting blindly. And again, you're not going to get perfect at this, but you can develop that capacity over time systematically through meditation and other there are other modalities for sure, but meditation for me has been the most helpful. And so I really want to, you know, I know you're helping me with this, but to emphasize, this is not about, you know, having the luxury to tune out. It's about staying engaged without burning out.
You know, I'm also intrigued by these two worlds where you work for a very or more traditional media source, and while you're simultaneously building a podcast and an app and in a very new media source. And I'm wondering, as you're taking in all these voices and you're hearing the, you know, wide variety of approaches to media and the approaches to really just, I mean, I hate to use the word consumer, but I guess it's the right word, just consumer outreach, where you see this space going, what you've learned from living in both of these two worlds. And, you know, when you can have that beginner's mind, I mean, I feel like being a podcaster, I'm forced in a way to have a beginner's mind about the industry, and I don't love it, Dan. I don't love it. So I'm wondering if you could offer any insight.
So when you say industry, just to clarify, are you talking about the news industry generally or the podcast industry?
Well, I mean, how can we separate those anymore? Right. Yeah. Right. If you're a newsman and you're saying I'm taking in all these different sources, particularly from podcasts. And I mean, I listen to ABC News' podcast every morning with Start Here. So it's just like, I think that's what's so hard, right? Is like, we really can't compartmentalize them anymore. And I think what's so interesting is to see you have these sort of parallel tracks. And I'm just wondering, because you have, I would say you've built that muscle of beginner's mind and equanimity, when you see how fast things are changing and how they're starting to intersect in real ways in the way people interact with news and the way people enter even, you know, meditation. I mean, I think 5 years ago, if you'd said meditation app is the future, you know, like people have been like, what? I think it's all changing so rapidly. And I think sometimes it feels like we're staying in that beginner's mind space is destabilizing, which I guess is the point.
Yeah, for me, it's the point. You know, I'll tell you one thing as I look out at the landscape that I feel a yearning for, and I feel like maybe you can recommend a show where this is done, but I noticed that in listening to or watching or reading people across the spectrum, one thing I haven't seen much of is them talking to each other. You know, I know on the Sunday shows you'll have people who have differing opinions, but it's all pretty fast. I kind of yearn for a podcast where you're getting people together who genuinely disagree but can talk about it without screaming. Mm-hmm. And because what I find frustrating at times is I'm trying to hold two different fact sets in my mind at any given moment on any given issue. And then, of course, in the Trump era, the issue du jour, I mean, it's literally du jour tomorrow. It's a completely new thing that I'm having to learn about. And I've forgotten everything that happened the day before. There are 1,000 controversies I can't even remember anymore. It would be nice to have a space where you could have people in conversation, hearing each other out rather than trying to score points. I haven't found that.
I think the reason you don't see that and the model runs up against each other is what we always tell people is you have to build trust, and that takes time. And so switching people out every time is hard. You know, there's a lot of political
podcasts that I think are pretty good interview shows. But, you know, I think the power of our show is we don't, you know, you're here for an interview, but we don't do interviews a ton, because what we're trying to show is what takes place over time inside one relationship where you're discussing your differing worldviews and you're working on each other and you're building that trust and you're building that connection. And that's not what you're going to see if you're switching out the panelists constantly, right? Or like you're saying, if they're just coming in to, I mean, that's definitely why we started our show. We didn't want to just be, we're not professional pundits. We're not journalists. We're just, at the time, you know, when we started, it was two moms from Kentucky, and we would have conversations about politics that we felt like weren't taking place anywhere else. And it was an ongoing conversation. And I think that's what's hard, is it's even the new media environment doesn't give a lot of space for that ongoing conversation. I don't know. What do you think, Beth?
Well, I think the connection I would draw between this discussion and the mindfulness conversation is that our brains are trained to hear disagreement one way as well. And so for a lot of listeners who come into Pantsuit Politics with the expectation that we're going to disagree, in their minds, that means we should disagree all the time on everything, and it should sound like disagreement, and disagreement has a certain tenor. And so we don't meet that expectation. So people say, we hear from people what you're saying all the time. I want a show where people genuinely disagree. And it sounds like they mean on every single topic through the rubric of the talking points that I hear on maybe the Sunday shows, but just at a different volume. And I'm not sure that that can exist, because I think what Sarah was saying is right. There has to be a trusting relationship, and trust is only built when you concede the points that you agree on, or you say, like, actually, we don't break down differently on this issue. It's so fundamental that we're aligned on it.
Well, good on you guys.
We're trying over here. We do our own thing. That's why we had you on here, because we love the idea that there's a space for mindfulness and everything, but particularly in the news and politics space. I mean, we've all come through an incredibly difficult time. We're still in it as far as a pandemic, and hopefully we'll be at the end of it soon with the election. And I think anything where we can show that politics is about how we live together in community, and the news is what's happening in our communities, and how we take in that information as individuals, can, it doesn't just have to zap us, like you said. Like, it doesn't have to be something that is constantly depleting our energy. You know, people always ask, well, how do you talk about the news every week? And I'm like, well, I'm sitting down with a close friend and processing it. That's how. I'm not just taking it in, shoving it in a box in my mind and trying not to look at the box, right? I'm actually processing what's giving me anxiety and thinking through my emotional reactions and bringing that mindfulness to it. And listen, again, thank you, because your work has been an essential part of that in my life.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready. Our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reeds. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love, chance encounters, a slow burn, friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
I recently reorganized my closet and realized that I never need to buy a white blouse or a blue dress again as long as I live. Guys, I have plenty. I did want to add some much neglected color, like pink and yellow, to my closet, and I knew just where to go. Quince always has timeless pieces and a true rainbow of options that can help you build a classic wardrobe no matter the season. It's getting warmer, so I got a soft pink chiffon pleated miniskirt that is so cute, and a really beautiful yellow cashmere tee. It's short-sleeved. It's perfect for the sort of bridge weather we're experiencing right now. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar
brands, and Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I absolutely love it. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pantsuit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pantsuit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pantsuit. Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
Let me ask you guys a question, because there's a debate that I've been following that I find really interesting. I've seen this play out on Twitter a couple times now, where you see kind of center left, or just center folks from the center, saying something to the effect of, hey, everybody on the left, we should try to understand why 70 million people voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. Or there was a Sewell Chan, who's the editor of the LA Times opinion page, posted that they turned the whole page over to Trump voters to write letters to the editor. And then they filled the whole opinion page with that. And there's been an enormous amount of pushback from the left saying, we've heard enough. And the call for empathy and understanding is a privileged one, because your lives aren't at stake the way ours are. And so I find myself on the one hand, you know, as somebody who is incredibly privileged, thrown back in my chair by that, like, because I can see how, and oftentimes when people point out privilege, I it's a moment for me to go into self-awareness. And at the same time, this fear that, you know, we are living in the same country, and we have to try to get along and understand one another. And so I'm just curious where you guys fall on in this debate.
I just don't think there has to be one call, and that the problem with Twitter is that it often feels like there's a right answer, and if we all just work on the problem long enough, we get to what the right response is. I think there's a different call to people of privilege sometimes in political engagement than people who are marginalized by our systems and by humans that they share space with. And so to me, it's not right or wrong for a newspaper to devote that space to a viewpoint. And it's not right or wrong for people to point out that there's a lot of privilege around that, and that some of us don't need that information, that for some of us, the time for empathy has expired. But I always feel, as a white person and a person who's in the middle class and safe everywhere I go for the most part, that it is my job to build those bridges and understand people who think very differently about the world than I do. And it's also my job to hear out the voices who say, enough of that, put me in the center, not that person, and that living in that tension is part of the responsibility that I have as a person of privilege.
I've been thinking about this a lot. When you mentioned Vox, I've been sort of obsessed with Matt Iglesias's decision to leave Vox and his writings about that. I have enormous respect for him. I think he's so smart. And you see this more and more. And I think what, you know, mindfulness and equanimity is powerful here. And what it's taught me is that exactly what Beth was articulating. Like, there's a force binary here. And I think that we use, particularly, I'm going to say the left a lot, the political space to moralize. And let me be clear, I think there's a space for moralizing. I really think it's important to say this is right and this is wrong. But sometimes, you know, political Twitter is not the space to do that. Sometimes politics is not the space to do that. And I think we wrote about this in our book, that we've just put everything in that box. We just put identity and moral and ethical values and how we're going to run the sewer system. I mean, everything along that entire spectrum in this one box. And I just don't think it's built to hold it. And I think you're seeing that struggle inside journalism right now in particular, that I feel, you know, that's what I hear. And maybe I'm projecting, but sometimes what I'm hearing from people like Matt Iglesias is like, you're asking me to do things that aren't my job. And I think that's really hard. And I don't think there's an easy answer. And like Beth said, I'm not sure there is one answer. We need to reach one. But, you know, she said once on our podcast, I don't ever want to turn away from more information. And so I think that there is a tension between saying, you know, learning is learning, and being curious about our fellow citizens is important, and making sure we don't elevate that above other important and essential and historically marginalized perspectives. But, you know, no one's asking, and we certainly aren't anyway, asking, you know, just random strangers to walk up to Trump voters and try to figure it out. Like, there's spaces in which that can be done, either because you have a personal connection to that person and you can continue the hard work of influencing them, because you are a journalist and it's your job to report on all aspects of the electorate. And I feel like there's a sense on Twitter, like, well, we have to decide the right way. And not only do we not have to decide that, but Twitter's just about the worst place to work that out.
Yeah, such interesting responses. I actually posed the same question to Lori Santos the other day, who's the host of a really popular podcast called The Happiness Lab. And she's a professor at Yale who studies, you know, human well-being. And she said a very similar thing to what Beth said of, if we feel like we have the resources and the capacity and the privilege, frankly, to, you know, reach out and try to understand people with whom we disagree, then great. But if you feel like you don't, you shouldn't be forced to.
Right. But who's forcing you to if they put it on the LA opinion page?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is what you're bringing up, kind of just brings to mind, like, the one of the a primary conundrum of the age, which is there's always another good point.
Right. Right. And that's where, again, not to steal your point, but that's where mindfulness, I think, is helpful. And I think it's been really, you know, we tell people all the time, it's a country of 300 million people. There's going to be tension and complexity, and we're just going to have to hold it. Sometimes we're going to have to say, I don't know. Sometimes we're going to have to say, I think you're both right. You know, like, I see both of your points. And I, you know, that's hard. And I think that bicep curl of noticing, I feel pulled, or I feel that tension of a space in which there is not an easy binary yes or no, right or wrong answer, is really the most valuable, at least for me personally, in this current historical moment in the political space and the new space.
Can I give you two little mantras from Joseph Goldstein?
Yes, oh, please.
Always.
I say these gingerly because if you're feeling taxed, these are challenging practices. So, you know, just go at your own pace or decide not to do it. One of them is, don't side with yourself.
Mm.
And that's just really useful personally and politically. It's just, and it's just if you find yourself wound up feeling, you know, dogmatic, really convinced you're right, it could be in any context. I just notice when that happens to me that there's a pain there. There's a sort of subtle pain of shutting out any other point of view, really trying to convince myself or work myself up into something when some part of my brain knows, well, maybe there's another way to look at this. And just in those moments, if I can remember, don't side with yourself, that's pretty useful. And then the other is, and this is going to sound, for as a for me as a guy who's, you know, really tried to make his bones as somebody who doesn't lapse into too much sentimentality, still sound a little off brand, but I like it anyway. It's love no matter what.
Mm.
And again, this is challenging and I'm not saying everybody should do it. But it is useful personally and politically. And it's like, I'm going to remain unshakably convinced of the fact that no matter how much we disagree, we are fundamentally connected simply by dint of the fact that we're both drawing air on the same planet, drawing breath on the same planet. And love no matter what means there's no back door.
Yeah.
And so I have applied this incredibly imperfectly. And I usually just forget to even try. But in the moments where I try, it's interesting. So I just toss it out there for consideration.
I think all the time about hearing Sharon Salzberg on Being. She's another one of your meditation teachers. I love her dearly. And she was on there and she was saying that people think love is passive. Mm. People hear love and they think it's some sort of either romantic or schmaltzy or a passive act. And she's like, it's not. It's powerful. It's an action. I think about that all the time.
What helps me with this kind of dilemma? So I think about the Tom Cotton op-ed as a good illustration of what we were just talking about, that I feel that the Times was both justified in running it and that the criticisms of running it were fair. I go to the Pema Chodron story about tigers above and tigers below, and this is just the condition of your life, that there's always peril and tension, and that we're basically always caught in a moment where we have a decision to make about how we meet the moment. And that helps me understand that it is not my task to resolve that tension as much as to just see it for what it is and then make a decision about how I can act constructively. And I think that's where the sort of love always and anyway and in spite of is really helpful.
Could you, I wonder if people listening to this will think, okay, take the Tom Cotton thing. If you're going to hold both sides, where are you? Are you just left with a sort of mushy nothingness? What would you say to that?
I feel more grounded when I can hold on to both sides than when I try to sit in one or the other, because it doesn't mean that I don't have a perspective. So if I were a decision maker about the Tom Cotton op-ed, I would have run it. That, to me, rests on the principle that I don't ever want to be afraid of information, and I would rather know where people stand than where they than speculate about it. So it doesn't feel like mushy nothingness. It just feels like an acceptance. It feels like a radical acceptance of what is, that I don't like this viewpoint and it exists, that some people will feel attacked by this viewpoint, but surfacing it makes it less powerful to me than if it is unsurfaced. It just feels like I'm putting my feet on the ground. And this is where I sit with the 70 million people who voted for Donald Trump when I did not and can't fathom how 70 million people did. There is a moment of just accepting, well, they did. And so Donald Trump's presidency was not a fluke. And these are dynamics that are going to persist in American life. And I feel less mushy when I can just acknowledge all of that and then ask the question, who do I want to be in that reality?
Well, and for me, one of the things that we find so hard to convey, and I'm sure that you do too, is often when we're saying this is our approach and this is what it means to us, like, we can't say it. You have to feel it. You have to experience. Like, you can talk about meditation, but there is a certain amount of the impact of mindfulness that you have to feel. And I think for me, what I've realized doing this podcast and learning to think and talk about politics in a different way and just living through the last 5 years in our country is it's not a mushy nothingness of no right and wrong. I think when people say that, what they're confronting is a lack of control. I think what the undercurrent in so many of these conversations is about control. I think that there is, when we say there's a right thing to do and we should do it, what we're saying is, I think there's a way to be in control of this environment. And, or I think there's a way for me to assert personal or individual control in a way that makes me feel more comfortable in this environment. I mean, I think that need to control and to assert your individual like authority or empowerment. I don't know the right word I want, but it is what happens so much on Twitter. It's we want to feel better. We want to feel like we've done something and we have some control in the space because there's a right thing to do and we tweeted about it and that's it. And I think, you know, for me in my life with particularly with mindfulness, but with sort of those teachings around equanimity and how often that train of thought or that keyboard ninjing or whatever it was, it wasn't a, you know, some fear of nothingness. It was a fear of my own lack of personal control and just, you know, fighting at every chance for the feeling that I had some control over the environment. And it's so hard to convey to people that if you can let go of that, that it actually is empowering. And it's not that you see you have control. It's just that you see you're not alone and that you see that there is comfort in that connection and that grounding of realizing like this is the human condition and you're not alone in it. And all those illusions of control were just that. They were just illusions. And it felt scary to drop them. But once you did drop them, that the connection to other people was way more rewarding than any individual sense of control or righteousness or moral authority.
We don't live in easy times.
Mm-mm.
Well, we've kept you longer than we ask for. So thank you so much for spending time with us. Before we let you go, can you just tell people where they should connect with you?
So I have a podcast called 10% Happier. Check that out. We talk to meditation teachers, researchers who have developed expertise in various areas of, you know, psychology and the human condition. We'll talk to somebody famous who is doing good work on his or her own mind. And also I have a meditation app, which Sarah and Beth, I now know, both use, which I'm really grateful for. It's also called 10% Happier. And I'm on ABC News. I'm one of the co-hosts of Weekend Good Morning America. So that's probably more than enough, Dan Harris.
Well, we're so glad we got some Dan Harris here. Thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, great questions. You got me thinking. And yeah, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Yeah, it was lots of fun.
Listen, y'all, let's be serious. I'm 42 years old. Of course, I take my skincare routine seriously. There are a lot of daily skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles. But how do you know your products are actually working? Well, Ritual is here for you. They have Hyacera, their once daily skin supplement, clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. They conducted a clinical study and it led to a 3.6 times reduction in crow's feet within 90 days as compared to a placebo and a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness within 90 days as compared to a placebo. I love taking my Hyacera every day as part of my skincare routine instead of just slathering more products on my face. It feels like I'm doing something from the inside out. And their one daily capsule is essenced with soothing vanilla, so it's a very pleasant experience. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Spring is so tricky because I feel the sun shining, the earth is waking up, and I want fresh, vegetable-forward meals. And I'm running in 75 directions and don't have a lot of kitchen and prep time. Fortunately, Factor is here for me and for you with fresh, never-frozen meals that are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes. They have a ton of options for us, including keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, calorie smart, and so many add-ons. If you need help with breakfast or snacks or on-the-go lunches or beverages, Factor is here for you. Every meal I've had from Factor is so well composed, it's so flavorful, the sauces are delicious, and Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look for Earth Month Eats badges on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/pantsuit50 and use code pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code pantsuit50 at factormeals.com/pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Thank you to all of you for joining us for another episode of Pantsuit Politics. We hope that you are having the best Thanksgiving holiday available to you. And we will be back in your ears on Tuesday of next week. And until then, keep it nuanced, y'all.
Pantsuit Politics is produced by Studio D Podcast Production. Elise Knapp is our managing director.
Maggie Penton is our community engagement manager. Dante Lima is the composer and performer of our theme music.
Our show is listener supported. Special thanks to our executive producers.
Martha Brunitsky.
Linda Daniel.
Allie Edwards.
Janice Elliott.
Sarah Greenup.
Julie Haller.
Helen Handley.
Tiffany Hassler.
Emily Holiday.
Katie Johnson.
Katina Zuganellis-Kasling.
Barry Kaufman.
Molly Kors.
Lori Ladau.
Lily McClure.
Emily Neasley.
The Pettons!
Tawny Peterson.
Tracy Putoff.
Sarah Ralph.
Jeremy Sequoia.
Katie Steigers.
Karen True.
Annika Uvaline.
Nick and Elisa Valelli.
Catherine Vollmer.
Amy Whited.
Jeff Davis. Melinda Johnston. Michelle Wood. Joshua Allen. Morgan McHugh. Nicole Berkless, Paula Bremer, and Tim Miller.